Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It's 8 o'clock. It's Thursday night. You're listening to LA Talk Radio, and this is The Writer's Block. I'm Jim Christina, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Miss Bobby Jean Bell. And we have a great show for you tonight. Well, I'm going to let Bobby introduce our guest. But I've just had a great week, I have to tell you. My week has been perfection.
Tell us about your week, Jim.
Well, I got new glasses last Saturday. And I can actually see now. And it's a funny story. I was in Riverside yesterday, and I was at an Applebee's waiting for my meeting to show up. And waitress came over, and she asked me how I was, and I said, I'm fine. And she goes, are you waiting for someone? And I said, no, I'm kind of like hiding out in Riverside. She goes, oh, my. Well, let's not use your government name then. I'll just call you Jim. I said, well, that's a good thing because that actually is my name. It's Jim. I gave her a card, and she went, oh, my God, I got it right. How did I do that? So she went running over telling her girlfriend. She says, I just guessed his name. I don't think I won anything, but I guessed his name.
Oh, you just have fun everywhere you go.
I do. Well, you have to. You know, at my age, you can't afford not to. Bobby, what you got going on?
Well, I would like to just start out by saying that The Writer's Block is sponsored by Black Dog Publishing and the Out West Boutique and Cultural Center, and we're hoping that you'll call in tonight. So get this number in your phone for automatic dial. It is 818-602-4929, and we want to hear from you.
Well, I'm already here.
We've had a caller, I think, almost every week that we've been on.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have.
And our guest tonight is J.R. Sanders. And shall I just go ahead and introduce him?
Rock on.
I'll just go ahead and introduce him. We're so happy to have J.R. Sanders and his wife, Rose, with us in the studio this evening. Although she's refusing to come up to the mic.
She's trying to hide in the corner.
But we love to see Rose, too. And we're so glad that she came along with J.R. Western author and historian J.R. Sanders is a native of Newton, Kansas, one of the original wild and woolly cow towns, whose deep interest in Old West history dates back to childhood visits with his family to the Dalton Gang hideout, Abilene, and Dodge City. He currently lives in Southern California with his wife, Rose, and dogs, Pharaoh and Monty. A frequent contributor to Wild West magazine, J.R. is a member of the Western Writers of America and the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, and one of his first books, The Littlest Wrangler, was a children's book. His most recent book, Some Gave All, Forgotten Old West Lawmen Who Died With Their Boots On, is a terrific book, and I'm going to actually tell you what Henry Park has to say about it.
Okay.
And Henry will be a guest here July 30th. This is a remarkable piece of research and writing by J.R. Sanders, who has previously penned two books and many articles for Wild West magazine. His fascination with the Wild West goes back to his youth, growing up in the once lawless cattle towns of Newton, Kansas, and childhood vacations to Abilene, Dodge City, and the Dalton Gang hideout. Sanders' subjects are meticulously researched with primary sources. His bibliography lists numerous newspapers, periodicals, censuses, and other public records, court transcripts, and books. His style of storytelling is engaging and accessible, never dumbed down. Hooray for the writer with the courage to use pettifogging when no other word will quite do. Please welcome to the Writer's Block Radio Show, J.R. Sanders. J.R., we're so happy to have you with us.
Great to have you here.
Thanks, Bobby. I'm glad to be here.
I would not to mention the fact that he is always a participant in the Buckaroo Bookshop at the Cowboy Festival in Santa Clarita in April.
Yes, he's long been a supporter of all of our Rendezvous with a Writer series programs.
He has.
Yeah, so it's another reason we're so happy to have him with us today. Do you have a question you want to start out with?
I do. I'm gonna start away from your writing right now. I just want your opinion. Well, everybody has one. What are your thoughts on how people pick the books they read? Now, I have heard some pick it by the back cover. You know, some pick it by 1.5 spaced 12-point type because they can read it. What are your thoughts?
Wow, that's a good question. I don't know. The old adage is you never judge a book by its cover, but I don't think that's ever been accurate. I think people do.
Oh, I think so, too.
I think the cover is, that's obviously the first thing that people see, and I think that can make or break a book, or whether a person shows any interest, any further interest in that book. Back cover copy, for me personally, that's usually where I go. If I want to explore a little further and see if this is something that I may want to read.
Right, right. And I think sometimes the title has a lot to do with it, too. It's an intriguing title and a good back cover. I think even if the type's real small and you got to get a magnifying glass to read it, I think sometimes people dig into it just because it's interesting.
Absolutely.
And of course, if it's an author that you recognize, that you know, that you like, you may just look by the author name.
Right.
As another, like, it's, so-and-so, and just grab it.
Like J.R.
Right.
Anything that J.R. writes. If he gives me a copy, I'll read it.
Do you? It is an interesting question to think about what we read and how we choose. Do you read a fair amount of fiction versus nonfiction, or do you gravitate towards one medium over another, one genre over another?
I don't read as much fiction probably as I used to. I don't know. Nonfiction always seems to be the first thing I'll pick up if I'm just looking for something to pass time or get in a little reading.
And the books that you've written so far have been very steeped in the West. Mm-hmm. When you read, I guess I'll say recreationally, do you tend to read that, Western-based books, or do you find that you're reading, other topics?
I'm pretty eclectic when it comes to recreational reading and fiction especially. I enjoy Westerns, obviously, but I'm a big fan of crime books and crime stories.
Okay. What's on your bedstand right now or in your electronic reader?
You
gotta watch those questions.
Yeah, no electronic reader here. I'm a confirmed Luddite. Let's see, what's on my... Actually, it's a pile on top of my desk.
Okay.
I think there's a book on grammar, word usage in the pile. There's probably James Ellroy's latest book, LAPD 53. Let me see what else is in that stack.
We're putting
a book of noir short stories.
Yeah, we're putting you on the spot, aren't we?
Well, the stack changes all the time,
sure,
so I'm trying
sure.
to remember.
Do you find that you read multiple, do you have, several things kind of at a time, or do you basically have one that you're working on until it's done?
I would prefer to do it that way, but I always seem to end up reading two or three at once.
Yeah. Jim, what about you?
That's what I do, too.
Yeah.
I usually get into one, and then something will come up in that book, and then I'll go grab another one to see if I can research that, and I wind up reading half of that book, and then I read another book, and... It happened with me with the Wyatt Earp story, The Life Behind the Legend, mm-hmm. and Doc Holliday, written by his great-great-great cousin, I guess, or Karen Holliday, whatever her last
Tanner,
name was.
Yeah.
Tanner, right. It just fascinated me because that book was totally, the story was totally told by the family's point of view. They apparently did not know what Doc was up to, really, in real life. And the same with Wyatt Earp. Wyatt Earp, I thought, was just a really good study in a man that was very conflicted. And
that's a good word for Wyatt.
And I think he knew good and he knew evil and he knew bad. And I think when he got to Tombstone, he was way over his head. The cow towns in Kansas were nothing like he had to deal with in Tombstone. So I think the book points it out quite well.
Speaking of, since we're talking about Wyatt here for a moment, I am going to go back to J.R.'s book for a moment on Some Gave All. In the preface to your book, Some Gave All, Forgotten Old West Lawmen Who Died With Their Boots On, you make some really interesting comments about heroes and sort of the definition of the hero. And can you share that? Because it was really enlightening.
Well, it's just something that sort of came about when I had the idea for the book. initially, which was to sort of pay tribute to fallen lawmen throughout the years who had never really had their stories told, you know, sort of history's forgotten cases. And it was there was kind of a twofold thing that went into it. One was this whole concept and definition of what is a hero. You know, you hear that word bandied about today, and people apply it to sports figures and, you know, celebrities or reality star people, you know, pseudo celebrities.
Ew.
And to me, there's nothing further from the traditional, you know, actual definition of a hero than that. You know, when you have people who put their lives on the line, you know, are willing to sacrifice themselves for other people, I don't know that you can get much more heroic than that.
I totally agree with you.
And then the other part of the book, or the other thing that bugged me, I guess, going into it, and you bring up Wyatt Earp, it's kind of interesting, was sort of this idea that Wyatt Earp is always the first guy that comes to mind when you start a conversation about Old West lawmen, even with people who maybe aren't real steeped in Old West history or real familiar with it. It's a name that everybody knows. They've heard it. There have been 1,000 movies and books and TV shows. So over the years, Wyatt Earp has sort of morphed beyond what he really was into this kind of iconic figure of the Old West lawman. When if you read, you know, the history of his life and of his career as a lawman, at least, it really doesn't jibe. You know, he really spent very little of his time behind a badge. He spent very little of that time really doing what...
enforcing the law.
Yeah, doing the things that you would associate right. with, you know, what a lawman does or should do.
Spent a lot of time dealing Pharaoh.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, his reputation, 99% of it comes from his days in Tombstone, when part of that time, you know, he was arguably acting as a lawman, but he wasn't really.
Right.
You know, if you look at it, the things that were going on, he wasn't really behaving as a lawman, wasn't really looking to enforce the law so much as personal grievances and family feuds.
Well, I think Wyatt Earp is probably a real good argument for the antithesis of a hero, an anti-hero, possibly.
And it just sort of rubbed me the wrong way when I started thinking about it, when I started looking at some of these unknown cases, that Wyatt Earp is so well known, and here are people whose careers equaled his or surpassed his, at least as a lawman, and nobody's heard of these folks. Nobody's ever heard the stories. Nobody knows about them. You know, if they've ever been written about at all, right. It was at the time, you know, in their own time, and very little then.
Now, there's something about you that I think probably a lot of people don't know or maybe not be aware of, is that you were a police officer.
I was.
You retired?
I did.
Okay. Well, what police force?
I was actually a school district police officer in the city of Baldwin Park, about 20 miles east of here.
Okay. Which gives you an awfully good view of what policemen do daily, and the word hero has to come in a lot.
Saw a lot of heroes in that line of work.
Absolutely, I'm sure you did.
What prompted you to go on the journey to begin the research to write this book?
It all started with, I was doing a magazine article for Wild West, and I needed a certain fact, and I don't even recall at this point what it was, but I was looking at a newspaper from Galveston, Texas, 1885, and I found the fact that I was looking for in this newspaper, and two columns over was this full column story about a U.S. Marshal having been killed recently on a train while he was transporting prisoners. And it was a really exciting, compelling, just slam-bang Wild West story that I'd never heard. I'd never heard this man's name, never heard of the incident. And I thought, you know, I was pretty familiar with, you know, Wild West lawmen and outlaws, had never heard this. And so my first thought was just the small view. I was thinking, well, this would make a great article. You know, I'll pitch this to Wild West and maybe write it up and it'll make a good story. And as I started researching that incident more and more, started turning up other little bits and pieces, and just the idea occurred to me that if there's this incident and this person that I've never heard of, there are probably a lot of these cases out there, a lot of people who never really were covered in print. And so I started digging for those stories, and just it was amazing how many there are. And I was only able, you know, you're limited by the confines of a book, so I was only able to cover, there are 10 chapters in the book. It actually tells the story of 14 officers who were killed. But I would love to have, you know, covered a whole lot more of the stories, and just obviously in 200 some pages, it's
right.
Not possible.
Now, rumor has it that you're doing another one.
I'm not actively working on that, but yeah, that's definitely on the...
I would think that would be a dream of yours.
Yeah. I'd love to do at least one more, and unfortunately there's no shortage of material.
Well, speaking of the research, because some of these stories, you must have had to go kind of to great lengths to get all of the pieces. And did you do a lot of travel? Did you go to historical societies? And like, how did you find their stories?
Little bit of everything. Most of them I started off with newspaper accounts, and then just went from there. You know, you'd get enough facts from a newspaper account to go to census records and county records and historical society records and university libraries. And it just sort of, you know, mushrooms out from there. And it was difficult in a lot of the cases because these stories had never really been written much about. It turned out that in several of the instances, there was actually much more information available on the criminals involved in these incidents than there was on the lawmen. And so some of the chapters in the book actually probably focus more on the criminal and the trial if they survived the encounter and they went to trial for their crimes.
Well, I think that was one of the things that's interesting about each story is it's we get the setup of it, we see it in action, and then the aftermath, after the lawman doesn't survive. And that was very interesting in appeals and all of this, you know, process, because I think we don't necessarily think that the law was what the law was then.
I think the process was the same.
Yeah.
It just was shortened
because
the appeals process was like, I don't think I got a fair trial. Tough.
You get this sort of image of Old West justice, I think, from movies and novels over the years, that it was, you know, quick and sure, and the judge banged the gavel down and the prisoner was marched out in chains to, you know, out behind the courthouse and had a rope put around his neck, or marched off to prison and spent the rest of his life breaking rocks. And that was very seldom the case, almost never the case. You know, the same legal framework that we have now was enforced then, and the same protections and a lot of the same courtroom maneuvers. In the cases that I looked at, you know, you had insanity pleas. We think of that as sort of a modern thing. Very common back then for someone to jury selection. All sorts of legal shenanigans going on with each side in the trial trying to get the jurors that they want. The same kind of stuff that goes on today. Well,
jury selection was kind of like just whoever walked in the courtroom saying, "You're a juror. Get up there."
Oh, not at all. Not at all back in the day. It's amazing. A couple of these cases actually went to state Supreme Courts on appeal because of jury selection issues.
Wow.
Was there anything, as you were researching the book, was there anything that really surprised you that you uncovered?
That was probably the biggest thing, was just how much legal maneuvering, you know, the sorts of things that we think are a modern issue with court trials, how much it was the same, and how often people who were guilty and were found guilty, and justifiably so, for committing really horrific crimes, did very short sentences, got, you know, early parole or sometimes pardons from the governors. Just, you know, sentences that really seemed out of proportion to what their offenses were.
We're going to take a real quick break. We're going to give you about 30 seconds respite here. If you think you can go potty in 30 seconds, go for it. Other than that, we're out of here.
Back to the Writer's Block. I'm Bobby Jean here with Jim Christina, and we're chatting with our guest, author and historian J.R. Sanders. We're hoping that you are also having a great time, because we sure are. And we would love to hear from you. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 818-602-4929. We've been talking with J.R. about his book, Some Gave All. And Jim, did you have a question for JR?
Actually, I know that you're working on a new book and about ready to come out in August or September sometime. Cowboy Moon. What Yes. can you tell us about that?
Well, it's a real different thing for me. It's a novel, which is brand new ground, and it's a little departure because it's not strictly a Western. It's actually a detective story. It takes place here in L.A. in the 30s. But there's a definite Western side to it. It's about a private investigator who's working actually for Republic Pictures, trying to find a missing screenwriter, and he ends up being drawn into sort of the world of the B-movie cowboys of the time.
Hmm. It sounds like really, really, really good. I'm just dumbfounded.
I can't wait.
Just having JR in his studio is just so cool, and I feel like a little kid.
Well, and he's going into the 1930s at Public Studios.
I know.
I can only imagine what kind of research and all you had to be doing to get kind of spot on.
And I possibly have told you this, and possibly not, but big news for me is that JR has kindly agreed to write the foreword to the new book, the second chapter of The Dark Angel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited for that. Yeah, and of course I'll get you the manuscript so you can at least read it.
So, is this based on? Is this fiction in your mind, or is it based on an actual event? Or can you tell us a little bit?
It's not based on an actual event, really. It's a fictional story, but being set in L.A. in that period and in that setting, there's a lot of history that's woven into it. History of the times, the studio system, and the way that Western movies were filmed and where they were filmed. And a lot of it's going to take place in your backyard. Some of it takes place at the old Monogram Ranch in Newhall, Vasquez Rock,
Griffith Park. Well, any filming in Griffith?
Not doing any filming in Griffith Park. Iverson Ranch comes into it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And, what fun you must have had to do all of that research.
Well, it was great because the fiction aspect of it, as I say, was new for me and was a lot of fun. But I'm a diehard, history geek, and so the historical aspect of it was a lot of fun, too, researching and trying to get all those details.
What made you decide on setting it in 1938? What is it about that time?
Because the story has to do with a fictional film that Republic Studios is doing in 1938 that they're hoping is going to compete with this film that John Ford is getting ready to shoot at the time with an actor that they borrowed from Republic, a young guy by the name of Duke Morrison, who's becoming at that time a lot better known as John Wayne.
Oh. And that film would be Stagecoach.
Made John Wayne.
Right.
John Wayne.
And when is this book coming out?
And young Duke Morrison, who's not quite yet the John Wayne that we know, actually plays a pretty active part in the story as well.
Wow.
He's the high school friend of my private investigator character. They went to Glendale High together back in the day.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my. That's you know, fun. We're sitting here in the studio, and I'm looking over here at Rose.
And I'm looking,
and I'm
at,
looking
my
at JR, and I'm looking at Rose, and I'm thinking, how the hell did this ever happen? Rose is, of course, the chief cook and bottle washer and chauffeur for Mr. Sanders, although tonight she said she's not driving.
No, I didn't.
She's gesturing, but not talking.
We love to see Rose, and she's been with JR. Every time JR has participated in anything, we kind of think of them as, you know, together.
Well, every time we go to the Cowboy Festival, and my wife says, is JR going? I said, yeah. She said, is Rose going to be there?
Yeah.
Well, of course.
That's all anyone really cares about. I'm okay with that.
Well, you know, the sad part about it is that's probably pretty true.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Although we do love you, JR.
I've learned to live well. Thank you.
Well, I'm going to take us back to the book for a second because I'm going to go away from the actual writing of the book now and kind of ask you a little bit about the publishing process.
Okay.
Your two books, Little Strangler and, of course, Some Gave All, are published by publishers. You're not self-published.
No.
And this book is also with a publisher. Are they been different publishers?
This Cowboy Moon is a new publisher. That I've signed with the publisher that did my previous books has actually sort of put a moratorium on taking on any new stuff. They're pretty inundated, and this is a little out of their line anyway.
So may I ask how you, this would be for all of our budding authors out there and folks that are looking at getting published, can you give us maybe some great advice or share an experience about how it is to find a publisher?
Well, with every piece of work you do, it becomes maybe a little bit easier, but it's still a challenge because you've got to find somebody who's the right fit for the book that you intend to write or the book that you have written. And the way I found the publisher for Cowboy Moon was actually through a writer's convention. I belong to the Western Writers of America, and I went to their Sacramento convention last year, and there are always a number of literary agents and publishers reps there. And I just sat down and talked with this particular publisher because they had presented on a panel and it sounded like they might be a good fit for Cowboy Moon. And just my good luck that, you know, not only was it the sort of book that they published, but the publisher who was there was probably the world's biggest John Wayne fan.
Oh, well, you can't go wrong there.
So it was just sort of meant to be, I guess.
I have a question, and I'm gonna kind of like roll it over here a little bit, and let's delve into social media. Now, everybody sitting in this room knows that you're on Facebook. And because we see your posts all day long, but on Western Writers and Western History, and was it Old West Guns or whatever it is, and of course your own page.
Mm-hmm.
And how much time do you spend a day on Facebook?
Well, you know, it's bits and pieces, but you know, I'd say I probably spend a good hour and a half, 2 hours, total on Facebook. You know, between reading things, getting caught up on. I belong to a lot of specific groups that pertain to, you know, writing or Western history, or now, you know, I'm getting very much into crime book groups,
mm-hmm.
detective fiction groups, and that sort of thing. But it's really been a valuable thing for me in building a career, just the networking aspect of it, and being able to touch bases with. Not only readers and potential readers, but people that are going through the same struggle you are, too, mm-hmm. other writers and booksellers, mm-hmm. and you know, everybody that's out there trying to keep the written word alive.
Right. Now, you had mentioned when we had spoken earlier that the more groups that you belong to and the more that you can network throughout, mm-hmm. the results are much better for you.
That's what I've found to be the case. The the various groups on Facebook because they're sort of focused. You know, if you belong to a Western history group, that's mm-hmm. what they're discussing there. So you know that that's where you can go for information, or that's where you can go to impart information that relates to what that group is about. So it just gives you a, and there's a group on Facebook for pretty much anything and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is actually
so
true.
It gives you a million options and access to people that you probably would never reach any other way.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I see that too. You know, Bob Bowes Bell, and we've met him because he was with us at the bookshop a couple of years ago.
Right.
I get so excited when I see Bob Bowes Bell has liked something that, you know, I put on Facebook,
no, huh?
You know, or and that's that type of thing where you go, wow, there's someone who, at least for this one, you know, moment, we're actually connecting,
Yeah, it helps you to know that you're not just, you know, screaming into the void.
Yes, I do think I do scream into the void quite often. But your posts are so interesting. And anything that JR has posted, I always make sure that I, you know, take a look at that. And I do repost quite often.
Yes, she does.
I kind of get in there and I get out of Dodge, so to speak. I kind of go into Facebook and do a few things and get out because it can really take a lot of time.
Well, it can grab you, and then you're there.
Yeah, it can. It can. It's something you really gotta.
Yeah, you have to be very
keep
careful.
Control of.
Correct.
It will control you. But I try to, you know, I try to be selective on what I post to, try to make it something that's useful and interesting. I've yet to ever post a picture of what I'm eating for lunch.
Yeah,
oh my God, is that just not the worst?
Cute cat videos.
Yeah. Oh man.
Now you also had a Facebook page for the book.
I do actually.
Right.
Yeah,
so
for Some Gave All, and then I've got an author page, and I try to keep up with those.
Right.
And maintain, you know, contact with people who have
some
interest.
How many? So you have three. Do you have a personal and an author,
yeah,
and then the book page?
Yeah.
And will you do a page for Cowboy Moon?
I will. All I'm waiting for there is cover art.
Right. Right. Well, that's really great because now we'll know how to follow what's happening with Cowboy Moon.
Oh, yeah. You won't have a choice, so probably.
Let's remind our listeners that we can call in and talk to JR. The number is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And he's a really interesting guy. You'd be smart to call in and talk to him.
Or ask him a question
about
the Old West.
I'm going to ask you now about your creative process. I understand writing a nonfiction book, that's primarily all research.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've written a novel. Talk to me about your creative process.
Wow. That's a tricky thing just for me to put into words because I'm sort of an intuitive writer, I guess. I don't really spend a lot of time thinking about plot or character, or, you know, I'm not one of those guys that does
the outline. And
well, I have a sort of outline, but probably not what anybody else would call an outline. I still use index cards. I mean, I'm so old school.
Yes,
index cards.
Woohoo!
3x5s.
Yeah.
They rule the roost.
Oh, yeah. I've got, you know, more index cards in my office probably than Staples does.
I love them. File boxes, you have a good system for how you kind of keep track. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you file everything by the Dewey Decimal System, do you, JR?
I do not. I do not, no. You know, I'm not one of those guys that writes, you know, a 5-page character study for each character. And developing characters for the novel, I would just sort of give some thought to, you know, the sort of character that I needed to perform a function in the story.
Sure.
And just sort of go from there and flesh that person out in my mind. And, you know, I've always been a people watcher, so you observe people and you pick up, you know, steal a little trait here and a little trait there, and, you know, the way somebody speaks, mm-hmm, or the way somebody walks or holds themselves. You sort of file these types away in your head.
Do you find it hard keeping the dialogue in tune with the character? That's always been a challenge.
I think actually for me, that was probably an easier thing than just keeping the story straight, keeping the facts of the story consistent and compelling and moving along. Pacing was probably the thing that gave me the hardest, the most difficulty. And dialogue, actually, I started off in this whole writing thing trying to write screenplays, so I think dialogue maybe was a little more of a strength.
Okay.
Do you write do you have a discipline about writing that you're writing from this hour to that hour, or
pretty much, you know, trying to treat it as a full-time job and schedule it like a full-time job.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be flexible. Things come up, or,
right,
you know, from day to day.
Well, this is your career now, writing.
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right, let's ask the big question now, Bobby.
Ask the big question, Jim.
The name of the show is The Writer's Block. Have you ever had writer's block?
Oh, I sort of exist in a permanent state of writer's block, I think. And, you know, with occasional bursts of creativity, and so you jump on those when they come along. But actually, what most people call writer's block, I think, is just fear. Fear combined with procrastination, maybe, and I'm a terrible procrastinator.
Now, Margaret Brownlee was here. You know Margaret.
Yes.
Her response was that she, I believe it was, she may have taken a wrong turn in the story.
She'll change the character's name.
And she goes through all kinds of things to get out of the writer's block. And all it takes is a character's name change. Boom, she's done.
Yeah, that was fascinating.
When I've gotten bogged down, what I find useful is I'll back up about 5 pages, and I'll scrap what I've written, and I'll start from that point and redo those 5 pages. And sometimes I'll write exactly the same thing. Sometimes it'll be sort of the same thing. Sometimes it'll be completely different, but it sort of gets momentum going
Right. Now, I was saying that when Margaret was here, is that a lot of times I'll stop there and I'll write something else that I'm thinking about. And then, you know, when a time comes, cut, paste it in, and that kind of gets me my flow back. So, I don't know. Everybody's got their own way of dealing with it, and we all get it. It's kind of like, like you said, it's a permanent state of fugue.
Well, she is.
You're in a zone.
Margaret also shared a deadline had a lot to do with it.
Deadline has a great deal with it.
Deadline will snap you out of writer's block every single time. Yeah.
Now, do you envision, when you were writing Cowboy Moon, Littlest Wrangler, did you already sort of know how it was going to end, or did that show itself to you as you went through the process?
With Littlest Wrangler, it was pretty easy because that story is, for the 3 people out there who've maybe read the book, that story was based on the classic old cowboy tune, Little Joe the Wrangler. And so...
So no surprise ending.
Well, I did have to change the ending because if folks are familiar with that song, it's, for a children's book, probably not the ending you would choose. The kid, you know, is squashed under a falling horse. So I had to tweak that a little bit.
Great subject for a children's book.
Yeah, well, you know, if you were Charles Dickens, you could get away with that. I think he killed more kids than smallpox. But
oh, yeah.
But hey, nowadays, I'm not sure it would fly.
We're going to give you about a 30-second break, and we'll be back on The Writer's Block with J.R. Sanders. This is LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block, and I'm here in the studio with Bobby Jean Bell, J.R. Sanders, Jim Bell over there holding up the wall. And Rose Sanders sitting in the corner trying very hard not to look interested.
Well, this would be a great time to just make another sort of, official comment about the show. If you want to know who our next guest is, if you'd like to see photos from tonight's program or contact us, we've been talking about Facebook tonight, please follow us on Facebook. The full name of the program to find us is The Writer's Block Radio Show, because there are some other writer's blocks out there. And that's a great place to see what's coming up or listen to podcasts of a previous show. And also, if you are an author, a blogger, a publicist, a literary agent, a publisher, a songwriter, a poet, you have a love for the written word, we want to hear from you. We are planning our guests through the balance of 2015, and we would like to have you contact us, which you can do also on that Facebook page.
We would, and you can also go to latalkradio.com/writersblock. That'll take you to our page, and if you want to listen to one of our podcasts, that's the best way to catch them. Bobby Jean also posts them on our Facebook page.
I do. And if there's an author that you'd really like to hear from, that would be something else we'd love to have you tell us, who would be someone you'd like to hear from. Feel free to post on our page, too. Great things about books or about the written word. There's lots of fun images running around through Facebook that I pull over and post on that page when a lot of them I pull off of JR's page. So we'd really like you to feel that this is a place celebrating the written word, and we invite you to participate.
And if you'd like to talk to JR or Bobby or me or Jim or Rose, number to call is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. JR.
Yes.
How much time a day do you allow yourself to write? Do you have a schedule that you keep?
I do. And it's, minimum 6 hours.
Okay.
Usually,
morning, afternoon, evening?
All day long.
All day.
During
the
day. Yeah. I have a wife who has a regular,
Right.
Can't call it a 9-to-5 job, 8-to-4 job, I guess.
And so she's a high school teacher.
Yeah. So while she's working, I'm working.
No, well, that's fair.
I'm going to take us back to another question that we've hit on, I think, with every one of our Western writer friends in the show that I think is an interesting one. And that's just, what do you see as this sort of the state of the Western today, whether it's film, TV, literature? Where do you see where we are today?
Well, I think the Western's pretty healthy today. And, you hear, it seems every 5-10 years somebody comes along and declares the Western dead and says a prayer over it and thinks that it's ready to go to the happy hunting ground. And
I don't see it.
And then here comes a Western, movie that hits it big, or a novel or series of novels, and TV show, Deadwood comes along and amps up interest again. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's always going to be that way. It's it's never going to be what it was in the 40s and 50s, at the height of the B movies and when TV was a new thing and 2 out of 3 shows seemed to be Westerns.
Warner Brothers owned the TV Westerns.
Yeah. And it's never going to be at that level again, I think, but that's okay. There's always going to be an interest. I think there's always going to be an audience. There are always going to be people that seek out those stories because they're really, the Western at its heart is just it's a compelling story, mm-hmm. Whatever form it takes.
Mm-hmm. I see that challenge of trying to get young folks to read and to go to Western music events and to read Westerns. They may be going to films, mm-hmm. but I know we're very involved with Western music, and we kind of look out at the audience, and everyone's having a fabulous time and wishing that there were more people there and wondering why there aren't more people that come, because when they come, they love it. Mm-hmm. And then they bring a friend and such. But we don't really see younger folks in those audiences, and I think that's sort of a little bit of a challenge in the Western genres, getting the younger reader, younger audience member.
Sometimes it's difficult to rope them in the door or get them to sit down. I mean, nowadays it's tough to get them to sit down with any sort of book. But I've also found that I think just that attitude that people get that the Western is a thing of the past, you know, that it's not relevant anymore, keeps people from trying to get kids involved in Western material. I've talked to a couple of writers who tried to set up book signings at their local, I won't name names, but, you know, their local chain bookstores. And a couple in New York, you know, they went to the store in Manhattan and were told pretty rudely that, oh, nobody reads Westerns. Yeah. You know, people don't read Westerns anymore. And I think that idea sort of creeps into people's minds, and so it doesn't occur to them to reach out to kids and to try to steer kids toward, you know, mm-hmm. Western material, mm-hmm. and maybe the writers themselves, even, you know, that gets into their thinking that, well, you know, kids today aren't interested in Westerns, and so let me just, you know, try to keep writing for the same audience, and you know, try to influence the same audience instead of reaching out to young kids and trying to.
Yeah, because that audience that's reading now started reading them when they were younger.
Right.
It's an audience that enjoyed, you know, this music and so forth younger and has stayed with it. So it's that kind of like, well, okay, so what happened, you know?
And kids have hungry minds, and they're, you know, we joke about today's kids with their electronic devices, but they're still, you know, the mindset of a kid hasn't changed. Right. They're still inquisitive. They're still eager to learn, and they're still always looking for something new that they haven't been exposed to that's going to interest them. And ideally, you would want that to be something positive, because there are plenty of negative influences out there for kids. And so really, what better than, you know, Westerns?
All right.
So, JR, how can people find you?
Oh, if they go on Facebook, I'm hard to avoid, actually. yeah, I have a Facebook page. You know, I should have written this down, because I don't even know. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head what
it's
my Facebook.
J.R. Sanders.
I think it is J.R. Sanders
/ off. I think it's Facebook / author right. JRS.
Right.
Website?
My website is very simple, jrsanders.com.
Okay. Email address?
Email address, jr@jrsanders.com.
There you go.
And you can always reach him through the writer's block.
You can always Absolutely. Reach him through the writer's block. And we want to thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And I want just to briefly let people know that next week we have Dale Jackson in. Remotely, he's going to be at home, hopefully. And we have our substitute co-host next week, Russ Avison, because Bobby, of course, has their Out West concert series. And you want to briefly get us what's going to be playing?
Very briefly. We still do have seats available, 661-255-7087, to make those reservations. We have Devin Dawson and the Outlaw, Miss Devin and the Outlaw, coming in from Fort Worth with award-winning Kristen Harris and fiddler Brooke Wallace. This will be a night of amazing Texas-style Western swing. You will have a smile on your face the whole time. You'll be tapping your toes, guaranteed to have a lot of fun. It's 8 o'clock next Thursday at the Rep Theater in Newhall. Again, for tickets, 661-255-7087.
Wow. You got a lot going on.
Oh, yeah.
A lot going on. And then, actually, week after next, we have, what do we have? Janet Squires.
Yes, we have Janet Squires with us.
Great lady.
On July 2nd, and Jim Jones from New Mexico on July 9th, both a songwriter and a novelist. And then we have a very special guest on July 16th.
Yes, we do. Me.
Yes. We'll be interviewing author Jim Christina on the 16th, and that'll be great fun. And we end the month on July 23rd with Ed Erdelak and Henry Park on the 30th.
Yes, we do. And with that, we have to say goodnight. Thank you, JR, again for coming in and seeing us. Jim, Bobby.
Thanks.
See you next
Rose.
Week.
And it's been fun. Thank you so much for coming in. Oops. Let's just take ourselves out here.
listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.